Nightlife. Bite-sized history.
In History Tonight, a chance for you to get involved in some citizen history, helping to transcribe the prison records of around 50,000 prisoners who were incarcerated in the period between the 1850s and the 1940s. Apart from the most famous of our criminals, Ned Kelly or Squizzy Taylor, for example, we actually know very little about most of the people jailed in this period, where they came from, what crimes they committed, and what happened to them in prison. Dr. Alana Piper from the Australian Centre for Public History at the University of Technology in Sydney is running a project called Criminal Characters, and she's here to tell us some more tonight, including about how you might get involved. Alana, good evening. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Thanks, Phil.
Now, what are you trying to do here? What records are you trying to, what are you wanting to transcribe?
So they're the Victoria's prison records. They're a series of registers that were basically kept in the same format from the 1850s, so the end of the transportation period, right through to the Second World War. And they offer unique insights into who criminals actually were across that 100-year period.
Why just Victorian records? Why not some? I mean, are there were other records, or well, weren't they kept?
No, there are other prison records for other jurisdictions, but the Victorian records are particularly detailed in the sorts of insights they provide into the prisoners' histories. For instance, officials would often note information not just about the offender, but about their families, such as if they had children who had been taken into state care, if they spent time in lunatic asylums, charity homes, inebriate institutions, and they're just, you know, an incredibly rich resource that I think if people get involved, they'll be really interested to see.
Oh, okay, so it's not just name and date of birth.
That's right. It's got all that sort of demographic.
And what you're in for.
Yeah, it's got all that sort of demographic information and the full conviction history from first offence to last offence for each prisoner, but also really rich other information about their time in prison.
Good old Victorians, you see. The Victorians, I mean, well, in that era, I'm thinking, speaking about the 19th century, they were great record keepers, weren't they?
Absolutely. And because it was a smaller jurisdiction than, say, New South Wales or Queensland, it was much more centralised.
So these are people who went to prison in what was the jail? Pentridge, was it?
Yeah, mostly Pentridge and Melbourne Jail.
Okay, you've been running the project for a while. You've already uncovered a few interesting stories. One is the story of William King. Tell us about him.
So William King's an African-American who came and landed in Melbourne in 1887. And within the year, he had been arrested for a burglary and sent to Melbourne Jail. He was only in there for 18 months. That was a fairly quick, but within sort of 12 months of him being released from that sentence, he's arrested again, and this time he was given a sentence of almost 10 years for several receiving stolen goods charges. Right. And this is when he really starts to sort of make a name for himself in the prison system, because within a very short space of time, he's amassed 53 offences against prison discipline, which was punished by spates of solitary confinement and confinement to iron chains.
Yeah. There's a socialist newspaper, the Toscan, is it, or the Tosin, gets involved with this story. What's the story there?
Yeah, so the media in general sort of started to take note during the 1890s that King was this notoriously troublesome prisoner who was undergoing all these multiple sentences within his time in prison. But the Toscan sort of starts to question the accepted narrative that it's all King's fault that he's undergoing these sentences. And they publish testimony from an anonymous source, which was most likely another inmate from the jail who had been released. And the inmate claims, or the anonymous source claims, rather, that King was being victimised because of his racial background as an African-American, that the guards were beating him at night in the cells, and that they were basically punishing him for groundless offences.
Oh, so on racial grounds.
Yes.
Was there any merit to this argument?
Well, that's it. It's very hard to know. So there were questions asked in Parliament about this, and the government took the line that King was a disobedient prisoner and that the punishments were warranted. But shortly after this, sort of within the year, he is released back into the community.
He was eventually deported to America.
Yeah, so,
although he never actually made it. What happened?
That's right. So that's not for another 16 years after that incident. So he did a number of further terms and continued to prove very troublesome, was tried several times for attacking warders, and continues to undergo these multiple solitary confinements, which really started a conversation in Australia about the practice of solitary confinement and its effect on mental health, because his mental state did seem to deteriorate. So there was a lot of discussion about that. But eventually in 1916, the decision is taken that the best way to deal with this troublesome prisoner is to deport him back to the United States. So he's put on board a ship that's going to San Francisco, and a police detective who had been involved in King's arrests earlier in the 1900s and also helped sort of escort him onto the ship. He writes later in his memoirs that basically when King arrives on board the ship, the captain says to him, "Well, you know, I've heard about your reputation, and if you give any trouble on this ship, we'll just be throwing you overboard because there's no coroner's inquests at sea." And within a couple of weeks, the Victorian government does indeed receive word that King has died at sea.
You're kidding?
Yeah, of a stomach complaint.
Dear me.
So a bit of mystery there at the end.
You think they probably threw him overboard?
Well, that's certainly what the police detective in his memoir seemed to imply.
Goodness me, dreadful story. What do you want people to do here? Like, you're asking, I mean, the records are all online, are they?
Yeah, so if you go to the website, you can see the records on one side, and basically there's a series of questions that ask you to transcribe particular parts of the information. So, for instance, if you saw King's record, you'd see the dozens upon dozens of punishments that he's been awarded in his time in prison, and you can choose when you go into to transcribe to just transcribe a part of a prison record, and that's sort of a very quick thing that you can do in 5 seconds, just, you know, transcribe the height of the prisoner or, you know, a specific question. But you also have the option to transcribe a full prison record for a prisoner. That sort of takes a bit longer, probably about 10 or 20 minutes, depending on how many convictions they have. But that really gives you an insight into who that person was.
So you want people to get involved and to do this transcribing and then send you the transcriptions. Is that what you're asking?
Well, the transcriptions submitted online. It's all an automated system. So you just sort of click done when it's done and it goes into the system, and that's going to be then creating a resource that will be deposited back with the Public Records Office of Victoria, and will not just be used by me for academic research,
but will be
a resource available to all Australians.
Yes, exactly. It's a bit of citizen history here. The records also throw up a whole lot of things, don't they? Alana Piper's with us from the Centre for Public History, and we're talking about the prison records of Victoria and how you can get involved in transcribing them and creating a resource for all historians into the future. You also learned from looking at the records that there are so many other distressing stories. In lots of cases, people with disabilities get sent to prison, not particularly because they've done anything wrong, but because there's nowhere else for them to go.
Yeah, you see that a lot, the lack of systems of care, that many people end up in prison, particularly during the 19th century, because of the lack of other sort of welfare provision in society. And so that includes people with disabilities. So you'll see if you go on and transcribe these prison records, prisoners who have missing limbs or lameness, prisoners that are deaf or blind. So, for instance, one of the prisoners, Annie Keys, there's a note in her prison record that she's been committed to the prison as a vagrant, but basically because she'd been blind since childhood, had been living with a married sister, the sister's husband told her to get out, and that's how she's ended up in the prison.
Really? So what, police would just commit them to prison?
Yes, well, if they had nowhere else to go, the view often of the police and the magistrates was that it was the kindest thing that they could do for them, that at least they'd be having a roof over their head and three meals, such as they were.
One of the beliefs, I suppose, in the 19th century is that people were sent to prison for the smallest, the most trivial of offences.
Mm.
Is that borne out by looking at the records?
Certainly, I think people would be surprised by the harsh sentences that comparatively trivial offences today would sometimes get.
Examples.
In the 19th century. So something like drunk and disorderly, you could be inside for 3 to 6 months on that.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Public order offences was by far the largest category of offending in the 19th century.
And so these are basically street offences, are they? Like, in other words, the cops are walking in the street and picking up people as they wish.
That's right. Basically they were sort of catch-all offences that could be used to imprison, you know, poor people, anyone who the police felt were creating a problem.
Hmm. Are the records produced in beautiful copper plate?
So they're all handwriting.
Yeah.
Quality, I think they're fairly easy to read, but definitely if you've got some experience of how to read handwriting, you'll have a better time transcribing them.
Yeah, okay. All right, the period is from 1850 to 1940. What defines that period?
So basically that's when we've got these records for. After that, they are closed due to ongoing restrictions
on
the sort of privacy issues, sensitivity around the data. But basically that's going to be the sort of first real insights we're going to get into large-scale offending patterns for a period outside the convict period in Australia.
Who was a crook and who was what? Who was not and what did they do?
Exactly.
Okay, so how can people get involved?
So if they go to criminalcharacters.com, that's the website.
One word?
Yes.
Criminalcharacters.com.
That's right, criminalcharacters.com.
And that will tell people where to go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, get involved. Sounds like fun. Alana, good to talk.
Thanks.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.